I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, how are you feeling today? Maybe hopeless? A bit lonely? Maybe you've got a headache or are suffering from the flu?
Well, before you rush out to the doctor or therapist, or maybe in addition to that visit, our next guest says there's an easier way to find some comfort from whatever ails you. A good novel. And she's happy to recommend the perfect book for you.
Susan Elderkin is here with us now. She's a writer, author, and bibliotherapist. She's the co-author of the new book, The Novel Cure, From Abandonment to Zestlessness, 751 Books to Cure What Ails You. Susan, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you. Good to be here.
Well, I wonder if we can start by getting a read on exactly what bibliotherapy is.
Well, bibliotherapy, as we see it, is the prescribing of books, and particularly fiction in our case, for life's ailments, be they physical or emotional or situational. I think we've all experienced a book that, if you read the right book at the right moment, has been transformative for us in some way, and our job is to try and find the right book for you at the right time in your life.
And what is that book for you? Do you remember a book that fit that bill?
Oh, a book that does it for me every time is, I don't know whether how big he is in the States, but the wonderful H.E. Bates, whose book The Darling Buds of May is a sort of 1950s classic from England, and there's not a cynical note in the entire work of H.E. Bates, and it's a great pick-me-up novel. I love it for its lovely, carefree vision of a bucolic English countryside existence, and it's... I live in America now, and it's a great cure for nostalgia for me and for homesickness.
Hmm. And in general, we're not talking about self-help books here or medical books. You prescribe specifically with your co-author, you guys prescribe fiction. Why fiction?
Well, that's our new thing in a way. I mean, it's not that we're against self-help books. They do a good job, and they're an important part of taking responsibility for one's own health and happiness. But it's quite easy to find your own self-help book. It's quite easy to see on the cover what it's going to promise to do for you. And our idea is that literature, 2,000 years of literature, has some really amazing minds working on what it is to be alive. And they've written stories, authors throughout the centuries have written stories about people who have struggled with the same issues that we struggle with every day of our lives. And it's missing out on a huge opportunity and resource if we overlook this as a way to expand our knowledge of how to deal with certain situations, or you know our love life or our domestic life, our losing a job or starting a family. You know, there's somebody in literature who's been there and done it, and possibly found a way around the very problem that you're facing.
What do you think it is about reading a piece of fiction when you're feeling a particular way that's so prescriptive? Because in a way, it doesn't make sense that a book, just mere words on a page, could help you feel better.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the magic of reading for me, and I've always been a big reader. I studied English at university, but I've always read since I was a child. And I mean, you know, on a basic level, there's something we escape into the world of the book. We kind of it's almost as if our reality has become suspended for that time, that we're totally caught up and transported. So that has that has a kind of meditative effect on my mind, and the rhythm of the words, these things all work on us as well as the ideas in there. So I think books can work on you in many different levels. You know, it's not just the story, it's not just what the character did and what they say. It's the very act of being transported in that way. It's a kind of break from the worries of being, you know, we're doing whatever we're doing before we were reading, and whilst you're reading, you're kind of, I don't know, you're in another place, and you're experiencing another sort of mindset in a way.
And do you think it lasts? Can reading a book have a lasting effect? You get through it, and you feel somehow in a different place than you felt when you began?
Definitely, yes, definitely. I think, I mean, also one can return to books which have been curative in a way. I mean, I remember reading Anna Karenina when I was about 22 and just sort of being inspired by this brave, heroic woman who kind of was so animated and had such a love for life. And I think, you know, really inspired my own approach to living. And now I read it now. I'm in my 40s now. It has a slightly different effect on me now. I'm more sobered by, you know, the ending of the novel. I don't want to say too much about it. But, you know, you bring your richness of experience of life to the novel, and it makes me think about... it makes me think about relationships and complex things in a very different way. But yes, I think it's, you know, that stayed with me my entire life. And the interesting thing is that the nature of that relationship with that book has changed subtly over time. That happens with the really great books.
And you don't distinguish between physical stuff and emotional stuff in the book anyway. Is that tongue-in-cheek, though? Can a book really help you with a broken leg?
Well, we have a bit of fun with the physical ailments. I mean, obviously, I was just joking with my husband because he's a doctor. He's a real doctor. And, you know, if you've got appendicitis, you need to go to the doctor and you need to have it removed. And there's, you know, there's a limit to how much we can help with that. But you know, appendicitis is actually in our book. And we prescribe the really wonderful children's book, Madeline, by Benelmans. And it's a wonderful story. Lots of children's books are great bibliotherapy for adults, actually. And it's a wonderful story about a little girl who goes into hospital for appendicitis. And it's, you know, first of all, a terrible thing. But, of course, she gets lots of sweets. She gets lots of presents. And after a while, all of her peers from her orphanage want to have their appendix out as well. And so, you know, actually, that probably is quite a nice thing to read when you're in the hospital with appendicitis, to look on the bright side of it.
Yeah, you're pretty comprehensive in this book. I stumbled across an entry for hemorrhoids. There's a book that you recommend reading for hemorrhoids.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a walking cure. I think one of the things which, we work on different levels in the book. Sometimes it's, you know, we prescribe with the opposite thing. So, like with the cynicism, when you're feeling cynical about life, we give you a book without any cynicism in it. And sometimes we're actually encouraging you to get up and do the same as the person in this book. And Ian Sinclair's book, Downriver, is the narrator of that book just walks and walks and walks around London. And our idea is that increasing the circulation will probably improve your health generally, but also if you know, after a while your feet will hurt so much that it'll take your mind off pains in other parts of your body.
Which shall not be named. So about depression, now that's something that I can imagine a lot of writers themselves have struggled with, and it's a theme in a lot of novels. What do you recommend for depression?
Well, we divide depression into two parts, really, because it's obviously there's a sliding scale. You can be a little bit blue or you can be seriously depressed. And a little bit blue, we prescribe pick-me-up books. We have got fried green tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, for instance, or Cold Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons. You know, these are light and brightening reads. But for the seriously depressed, it's a very different thing that's required, we found. I mean, we've worked with, as bibliotherapists, with patients with severe depression, and it seems that people don't really, they want to know that they're not alone. They want to know that, you know, they're not going crazy, and they want to know of other people who have been in their predicament. And we prescribe The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. We prescribe The Unbearable Lightness of Being. Betty Blue by Grand Central Station, I Sat Down and Wept, I think is in there, by Elizabeth Smart. These are books written often by authors who have experienced depression themselves and know really what it's like.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because, I don't know, reading The Bell Jar, this is an author who committed suicide. Do you really want to read that when you're already depressed?
Well, the way we see it is Sylvia Plath didn't have the advantage of having a Sylvia Plath novel to read. I mean, this is in a way, I mean, it is a very serious thing that she did commit suicide. But for those who have come after her, I love to think of it as her helping people from beyond the grave. I mean, I know definitely of at least one person that I've worked with who was hugely helped by that book, because it's like, my God, this is exactly what I've gone through. This is exactly where I'm at. And you know, Sylvia Plath may not have had a novel like that to go to. I'm not saying that, you know, she necessarily would have been saved by it, but, you know, possibly, who knows? And I think one can't underestimate the importance of not feeling alone with one's illness.
Well, I want to see if we can leave our listeners with one more. We're running short of time, a little less than a minute here, but what do you prescribe for anxiety, which is another well-known malady of our time?
Well, a couple of things I would suggest for that. There's a beautiful book called The Man Who Planted Trees by Jean Giono, which is a very slim little novel. It won't take very long to read. And if you're feeling anxious about things, you know, you don't want to be faced with a great big fat book. And it's about a man who plants acorns in the ground, and he has a labor of love over it, and he spends his evenings sorting the acorns into piles of good and bad, and the daytime planting them. And, of course, great forests grow up in the wake. So it's about really encouraging you to just breathe slowly, calm down, and to look at things in a very simple new way. You know, our lives are filled with lots of complexities these days, and sometimes we just need to step aside from that and just take one acorn at a time.
All right. Well, Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
It's been fun to be here. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Susan Elderkin, the co-author of the book The Novel Cure, From Abandonment to Zestlessness, 751 Books to Cure What Ails You.
If you have a book that you turn to when you're down, when you're sick, let us know on the Central Time Facebook page.